Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday, August 26th, 2015, and that means it's time for Weekly Manga Recap. I'm my ruler of time, here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm very tired, Nick.
Okay.
And I have realized my greatest quandary in life, my greatest struggle, is going to be me versus sleep. More so, actually, to be specific, it's evening Christopher versus morning Christopher.
Oh, yeah. Like that. Like whenever we had future Christopher and past Christopher competing against each other.
Yeah. This is even a more personal duel. This is essentially a Batman and Joker-esque tale for the ages. Because no matter what efforts morning Christopher does to clean up the city of Gotham, afternoon Christopher and evening Christopher is just like, I'm going to stay up till midnight. Fuck you. And then I don't have to pay any repercussions. That's your problem tomorrow. Then I get like 3 hours of sleep, wake up, and I'm like, oh, you fucking dickhead, you big basket of dump. And then the same pattern happens every single night, Nick. It's inescapable.
Right, because you commute to work and stuff, so you've got to get up by like 5 o'clock or some shit.
I get up at 6.
Okay.
Start work at 8. Yeah. So it's not a fun scenario. I greatly despise myself every morning. I kind of walk by the mirror and glare, not because I'm angry at myself, I'm just angry at who I'm going to be like 12 hours from now. And I'm just like, you know you're not going to get to bed on time. You know you're not going to set that alarm you're thinking of doing right now. You're going to be too lazy, and then you're going to wake up, be in a shitty mood, you're going to not have time to get breakfast. You're just setting yourself up for disaster.
Oh, poor morning Christopher.
Ah,
fruitless battle.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I'm going to stay awake till 11 tonight. See what he does. He can't hurt me.
Honestly, I could see going to bed at midnight and waking up at 6, but
God, no, I can't. It's murder. I'm getting old, though, Nick. I feel like I'm getting older.
You're like 4 months older than me.
It's like that, I'm having definitely one of those midlife crises.
You mean quarter-life crisis?
Yeah, but I like midlife crisis better, because it sounds slightly catchier, despite being more clumsy of a sentence.
Yes.
I'm very cognitively aware of the fact that I'm getting older, and not to the point I'm like, I'm so old, but I'm just like, oh, I'm all these kids nowadays, everyone's younger than me, like, everything that comes out, I'm no longer, like, I'm, like, thinking of movies that came out when I was a kid, and I'm like, oh, those are, like, the movies that when I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, those are so old, like, Airplane, what an old-looking movie, and I'm like, well, people think that way of Anchorman? Now when I sign up on websites, I have to scroll so far down to get to my actual birth year. I'm like, it was like a year...
Oh, it used to be the first available one on XXX.XXX.
Yeah, I was like, it used to be back in the day, I would just scroll down as far down as I could just to click any date, because I wasn't 18. I was just like, oh, yeah, sure, I'm born in 1921. What are you going to do, check? Now I'm like, oh, where is it? It's so far down.
My birth year is way down there now. Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of tired getting all the way down here. I should take a nap or something. And I wake up and then party for a couple hours, because I'm like, well, fuck morning Christopher, he's not getting off easy tonight. But it's something I'm very cognitively aware of, Nick. We're all going to get older and die one day. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I've been aware of that.
It's pretty
Although
sad.
I have a little version of that revelation whenever I realize that my definition of kids is getting older as well. Like, you know, when I was in college, it would be like, okay, freshman high school, well, little stupid kids. Or, you know, when I graduated from college, it was like, okay, people going into college, stupid little kids. And now I'm here, and it's like, you know, professional athletes, they're getting drafted and stuff, and I was like, oh, stupid kids. Like, wait, those stupid kids are like 22. Oh, no.
Oh, no, have I
those
gotten
old? Those stupid kids
old?
Are old enough to drink and drive and smoke and vote.
I think the first moment I felt sad is when I'm like, oh, there are players currently being drafted into the NFL who are my age, and that was the point where I was like, I've wasted my life. And I had to kind of take a step back.
Yeah, the
like,
dream's
yeah.
over now.
Yeah,
too late to be among them.
I'm never going to be a number one overall draft pick, I say as I like pounded my fourth Pepsi of the evening at that point in time. I'm like, why couldn't it have been me? Face first in the back.
You're holding the reason in your hand, aren't you?
Like, face first in the bag of honey barbecue Fritos. No twists!
Oh, God.
I do have a quick question, Nick. Apropos of nothing, I am drinking this evening.
Okay.
Is wine a masculine enough drink for me to be enjoying?
I don't fucking know. I don't drink.
I feel like maybe I should be having some.
You gotta be like a prim and proper gent, I think, to really pull off wine.
Well, I've got my pinky out. It is red wine.
I'm not sure that'll do it.
It's a stemless glass. I am also laying it on my House Tyrell Game of Thrones coaster. And I'm doing it while I'm doing a manga podcast. If I'm not sophisticated, I am at least a hipster. I'm one of the two.
That would make me close to being a hipster too, then. So, let's say you're sophisticated.
All right, cool, awesome. Let me grab a monocle.
Okay. All right, anyway,
we can carry on with the manga podcast now.
Right. So, while we are working on a Reading Cross game, we unfortunately have stumbled across a week where there's not very much to talk about in terms of what happened in our weekly series. We are without our full lineup, but we're only without World Trigger, so we've still got the grand majority of series to discuss. It's just that nothing fucking happened in almost any of them. We'll have a lot to talk about in at least one, but this may be like our first like roughly 1 hour long episode of the podcast in years.
I feel like that can't happen, if only because we just spent like 13 minutes fucking talking about wine and old and children of today. So
yeah, we're like, oh yeah, see, we're still young and fit because we deliberately made sure we could do continuing a long podcast when we could have chosen to go to bed early.
Yeah.
See? Yeah, we're still young.
Or inevitably we'll get on some tangent on some inane topic unrelated to the series we're talking about.
Well, that would never happen.
Yeah, no. You know what? You're right. Can't happen. We're good. Let's do it. Let's knock this out in 15 minutes.
Right, let's kick things off with Black Clover, page 26, Wild Magic Dance, which sounds like a music track, doesn't it?
Wild Magic Dance?
It sounds like some sort of, like, video game soundtrack theme or something like that.
Or, like, maybe, like, kind of like house music a little bit, but like the very, like the soundtrack you'd ride a dolphin to kind of music. Like, like rainbows are fucking shooting over your head and shit. That's the kind of music I'm thinking.
They use like the mute filter sound effect a little bit so that it's muffled at certain points.
Yeah, yeah. So it gets quiet, but you're still like, the beat's always there with me, in me, it's in my hands. Get it out, and you take a knife to your hand. That's when you're on too much LSD.
That's what happens when you listen to house music. Don't listen to house music. It's terrible.
Yeah. Actually, don't listen to any music that's not, yeah, fuck it. Let's just restrict it to 80s classics. let's go with that. In my
Phil Collins only.
I didn't say only Phil Collins, but, you know, you're going to get the best of that time.
But if you're going to say it, Nick, I guess we'll have to do that.
Oh. I'm just saying, if we're going to have to do 80s music, Phil Collins really was at his peak during the 80s, and the air tonight was pretty awesome.
See, we're still young. We're still cracking Phil Collins jokes like when we were 20.
Yeah. Nothing's changed. But seriously, it was in 1989. That's still 80s, too. That's a great soundtrack. I think, no son of mine on that? Nah. Another Day in Paradise, though. That's a classic. Anyway, you get what I'm talking about. What happened in this chapter? Nothing?
So, Asta found Zombie Guy and protected a little girl from him. And we pick up with that confrontation, and the guy is still like, I still have an eye drawn over my eye patch. And he acts a little bit crazy and manic, and he's like, oh, you're that anti-magic guy. Well, I'm got zombies. You've got no magic.
Everyone's plan to beat Asta is like, I'm going to throw a lot of shit at you. You can't possibly cut through all of these. And then it's like hard cut to like 2 pages later. Like, I can't believe you cut all of those.
Yeah, of all the things that Asta could have a bunch thrown up at him, it's slowly lumbering zombies.
Yeah.
I mean, that you're not going to really test his reaction time with that, I'm telling you.
Well, let me just tell you, not to spoil anything and cut ahead past the next, like, 8 pages of pure awesomeness, but, Asta doesn't even give a fuck about apparently cutting through corpses, so...
Yeah, he's got no qualms about desecrating the dead or anything like that. Just
no,
like,
no reservations about presumably killing what are... not, you know, it's not killing humans, but the idea of killing a human-like figure, you know, didn't raise any moral qualms in his head. He just goes at it like, rawr!
I mean, this guy has already struck several people with his cleaver to take them out before. He hasn't killed anyone, but he has shown no hesitation with swinging a giant sword at them. Maybe Asta's a little bit of a sociopath.
Well, it is a pretty blunt sword, so I don't know. Maybe it doesn't.
He's got
hurt.
Like nerf padding on it, so he doesn't kill anyone.
Yeah, it squeaks when you hit him. It just breaks all their magic.
We've got to, like, make a little sound effect every time that he hits somebody. But yeah, it turns out that the guy is matched up very poorly against Asta because he basically weaves his magic through corpses in order to send them against people, and Asta's cleaver just immediately slices through the mana, and yeah, it's really easy for him to take out the corpses and stuff. And Asta scolds the guy for attacking innocent people and says he's going to defeat him. And the guy is like, innocent! Anyone who doesn't understand my power is a sinner!
Oh, we actually cut straight to the end.
Well, I mean, I'm just, like, keeping the flow of stuff.
Yeah.
We just get past, like, about 6 pages of basically all the new characters getting to show off their specialty in magic. I mean, there's just this montage of everyone getting to do stuff. The guy who's declared himself as his rival has flame magic. We've got some of Noelle's siblings, rather, using different abilities. One of them has, like, oh, water creation magic, slashing sea serpent. And the female group, the one girl...
Blue Rose,
is, like,
I think.
Whatever. She, the one who is like, girls suck, don't they? Rather, guys.
I was like, wow, that's an awesome... Like, they really switched that on us. We're the all-female group that's anti-women. Like, wow.
She's all like, right. Oh, I have to manage my sister in every sentence. And she summons a giant golem with earth creation magic. I guess... I don't think that we really got to know this guy before. But he seems to be, like, the one guy in Blue Pegasus, really. Doesn't he?
He's not
as extreme, because he looks like a normal person, but...
A little bit, but his magic is the most terrifying to me, because it's apparently glass magic, and, like, I had a piece of glass stuck in my foot at one time, and it took me, like, 2 hours of digging it out with a protractor to get it out.
Why would you do that?
I had no other way to get the piece of glass out of my foot. It took a really long time. My mom eventually was just like, just accept it, let the skin grow around, and one day it'll come out. I was like, this is a terrible suggestion, Mom. You're no help at all.
I'm going to walk on this.
Yeah, like, I have to walk on my foot the rest of my life. I don't want a piece of glass just stuck in there. So now I'm of the mind that glass is probably the most dangerous substance in existence.
Glass is pretty terrifying, because, you know, it can shatter so easily and stuff. Yeah. Another one of Noelle's siblings has these mist clones. There's a guy who summons a sand knight thing. The captain of the female squad has briar creation magic, which is basically a bunch of thorn vines and stuff.
She makes it out of her sword, it looks like. She makes a sword that has it. She's holding, like, some kind of handle on her, and the vines seem to be coming
out of her. Yeah, I do see that. It's like the hilt of a sword, but there are vines coming out of it. She's got a pretty terrifying ability too, because she just summons these giant masses of vines that basically turn into the forms of trees, and they're carrying these zombies up into them.
Unrelated to manga anecdote as well. I also have a briar story that's somewhat terrifying to me at
Stop
a young age.
Talking about things you got stuck in your body, dude.
No, like, well, this is going to be a real bad follow up to that. I went to the woods with my uncle once. But he was there, I was there with my two cousins. We went up the mountain, and we were going down. We definitely were taking, like, an unspecified path, and he had to, like, help us down at a point, and he, like, left us at certain points as he helped the younger members down further, and he left me in the middle of a thorn patch, like, on a sheer, like, rock surface. Like, I was like, if I don't hold myself steady, I'll slide down this and die. And I remember being like, why did you do this? And yeah, he's just like, yeah, toughen up. And here I am drinking red wine talking about manga, so I think we see how it went.
The one captain who took command of everybody has flame creation magic, but he turns it into the shape of a giant lion. And also the captain of the Silver Eagles has mercury magic, which is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, that shit will just murder you. Yeah. But maybe it's not actually, like, that deadly in this universe.
Well, he is basically summoning liquid metal rain, which is destroying every corpse it touches.
It is just ripping through them.
It's like they're being struck by a rain of gunfire.
I do want to note something, though. In all these pages of very little real intrigue, like the teases, you know, whatever, we saw a lot of their powers. I just like and find very amusing that all of these characters are taunting zombies.
Yeah.
As though zombies give a flying fuck about what they're saying. Like, try taking out my magic! Quit grossing my sister out! I'm like, they're zombies. They don't say anything. You might as well be talking to a wall and taunting it, being like, look how awesome my magic is! It's like, it's a rock. You can stop now.
I mean, it is to emphasize their little, you know, primary character traits and stuff.
But some, like, of the sand really guy who's like, crumble before my magic. I'm like, it's a zombie. It doesn't give a fuck about your magic.
I mean, some of them make more sense than others. You know, it's like, I won't allow them to touch me. Like, okay, yeah, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You can almost say she's...
Die in elegance and beauty. Okay, so he's got a thing about that.
You can almost say they're saying that to themselves at certain points. But then there's, like, some where you're just like, you know, crumble before my magic, where you're like, you're clearly talking to somebody else who's not alive and can't respond to you. I feel like you're just lonely.
Maybe they aren't friends with their guilds, and that's what's so important about the Black Bolts.
It's very possible.
See? Pulled it around. Anyway, that's basically Black Clover. Yeah. Everyone fought zombies, and we got to see a bunch of different types of magic. Very visual chapter, lots of full-page spreads, lots of semi-page spreads, and so not a lot really happened. I knew that was going to happen at some point. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, there's nothing really else to say. I don't know if there's much to say about this week of Bleach either, really, Nick. Do we just move on?
Bleach.
I already did something very sensible and understandable like we expected him, expected him to do.
639. Baby, hold your hand to.
Clearly, the title's only in reference to the fact that he's flying a giant hand. I think the baby part maybe just a song. I think that's what he was going for.
So last time, Peronidas managed to temporarily infect Mayuri's arm after his finger had been cut off. And then it still corrupted Mayuri. And Mayuri was like, oh, I must perform surgery on myself. And he stopped the infection somehow. And this chapter opens up with him being like, I haven't performed arm surgery in a while. I guess I've lost my touch. It's embarrassing. And Peronidas starts suddenly getting a lot more verbal and verbose. Like, just going, oh, are you embarrassed that you are flustered right now? Like, before you were just going, like, name, not hand. Where did this come from? Like, now you're taunting him.
Want be friend? You motherfucker. Like, wait, where did that come from? What was that last part? Hand? Like, it started off like he's a Neanderthal, and now he's just like Frasier. He's just like, well, I do believe, Niles, that the Chardonnay is a little bit dry, don't you think? I'm like, what?
Ah!
He turns around, he's like, oh, right back in the character. Ah, Parnitas want glove for fingers! So anyway, I says to Mabel's, I says.
Yeah, so Parnitas is finger grows into a second hand, which then jumps towards Mayuri, and Mayuri throws something at it, which causes it to blow up. I mean, we see him not throwing something at Peronidas, but rather with his arm in the follow-through motion and the explosion having appeared.
Like,
so I'm assuming he threw some sort of bomb. I'm assuming.
I'd like to think he just threw one of those fucking, like, cellophone S's from the second Superman movie. He just has those on him, too. Like, someone had to get another use out of this thing. Poof.
So Mary observes, so the fingers that you rip off become another left arm. It doesn't seem like I can take you back with me in pieces then. It's going to be he's torn his own finger off. And Bernadette is like, not even like crying out in pain this time. I guess because it only hurts when someone else does it. Yeah. Because remember, like, when his finger got cut off, he went like, and this time he's just going,
That was inconvenient.
And, yeah. So, right. Mary goes off and talks to himself some more. Because, he's like, I recall reading when I was young that Rayo's right up... By the way, I had a bitchin' comb over. Rayo's right arm controls stillness and the left arm advancement. Like Master Hand and Crazy Hand, you could say.
This is Crazy Hand.
This is Crazy Hand.
Master Hand's over there, drinking Chardonnay, talking about the recent stock exchange crash. Don't mind me, I'm just being sophisticated. Oh, don't have your giant baby eat me too, no!
Spoilers.
I was the good hand.
So, Myri continues to talk to himself. After, remember, he had that whole conversation about, are you actually talking to me, or are you talking to yourself with Zaraki? Yeah, see? Yeah, so he's like, knowledge gained from books is merely knowledge. I tend not to believe it until I have proven it myself. That word doesn't go there, actually. Yeah.
Which word?
Knowledge gained from books is merely knowledge. I tend not to believe it until I have proven it myself. That's not the right word to use there. You should have said something along the lines of, like, it's not trustworthy, or it's merely hearsay, or something like that.
Merely a theory.
Yeah, yeah. Knowledge gained from books is merely knowledge. Yes. Yes, it is. Knowledge is knowledge, Mayuri.
Knowledge equal knowledge. That's, like, his grand thesis.
Mayuri, like, draws out these complicated equations on a board and ends with knowledge equals knowledge. It's like, you're the smart character.
Everyone's like, God damn it. If he didn't have the ability to make anything happen instantaneously, I would hate this dude so much.
I still hate him.
Well, in universe, though, I feel like I was in Soul Society. I'm like, well, look, either I'm going to be taken to be one of his weird torture experiments that everyone's just going to hand wave over when he saves Soul Society, or I won't be, and I'll get to reap the benefits of the fact that this dude can just invent powers when he wants to.
So Mayuri is like, oh, good, I get to experience knowledge and verify it. This is great. And Pyrenees stares at him and has three arms to stare at him. And he just kind of, like, very patiently waits for Mayuri to take out his sword. And then he's like, ah, Bankai! Yeah,
it's not even like that. He takes his time, because there's ellipses. He's like, Bankai.
And I set it sideways somehow.
I can do that. That's my fourth power to reveal this chapter.
Forcing the reader to tilt their head to read. Yay!
It is weird, though. Like, it's been a long time since we've gotten, like, a Bankai sort of thing. I feel like we haven't had a moment where, like, a big dramatic Bankai has come out. Since most of them have been revealed by this point.
Right, because we've been familiar with a lot of the Bankai of the captains and stuff, and there was also that thing where people could steal Bankai, remember, a few years ago?
That was years ago.
What a pointless plot point that turned out to be, too. God.
Remember that one dude stole...
Has Jopak even used Yamamoto's powers? Because he's gotten everything else, so he doesn't... Whatever, we'll see.
Nick, Halibel's still locked up in a cell somewhere. I think there's some plot points that just aren't going to be addressed by the end of this.
Ginjo and the other fucking Fullbringers are still out there in the afterlife.
I like to think that...
We saw Ganja hang out with them, but they didn't show up with him. Or the other Fullbringers, for that matter.
I don't know what the fuck they could possibly do. That would be like, I'm like, oh, thank God Tsukishima and Ginjo showed up. Oh, and Clock Dude. I thought you went to hell.
So, Yumi Chika immediately realizes, oh fuck, it's Kanjiki Ashizajeta. Kanjiki Ashizajiza. There we go. So he's like, oh no, he summarizes its abilities. It scatters a deadly poison within a 100 ken radius. 100 ken is about 182 meters. Thank you, shut up.
Wait, does someone actually say that?
No, there's a little note right there.
Oh, okay.
It's like, you bullshit fucking Soul Society unit measurements that never come up.
Wait, hold on. Why'd they do it in meters?
Because
we're American here.
Yeah, but it's Japan originally.
No, oh, Japan. Oh, it's a note directly. I thought this was an English like note, like English editor.
No,
like,
no. Yeah, Ken is a fake unit.
Well, I know, but I thought maybe it was an English.
If someone can verify if Ken in Bleach is a fake unit, please do.
I'm sure it is.
I don't really care to look it up if it's real or not. Anyway, so Yumichika very smartly realizes, oh shit, if we stay here, we're gonna die. So let's grab Captain Tsuraki and get the fuck out of here. Which is probably the smartest thing that anyone in Bleach has done the past calendar year. I have to give credit where credit's due. Unfortunately, this is only brought up so Mayuri can instead be like, oh, you idiot, that's not gonna happen this time!
Can you actually give him that much credit, though? Like, he knew Mayuri was fighting into his Bankai. He had to expect that the Bankai... Like, he waited until the Bankai was released to be like, oh, shit, I should maybe get out of the atomic blast zone? I think we can't give him two... I'm gonna give him half credit. I'm not giving him full credit on this. He should have had more foresight.
So Mayuri is like, killed by poison? I would never be so wasteful. With the information I just acquired, you are finally due. Konjiki Ashi Sogi Jizo Matai Fukuin Shotai! Okay, I'm proud of that one. You gotta give me credit for that one.
Apparently Ken is an old Japanese unit of measurement for distance.
Ah, so they use it because they're samurai themed. Okay.
Yeah.
Get with the fucking times, assholes. Use meters. Everyone in the fucking world that you allegedly police uses meters / feet if you're American.
Yeah, I was like, and then be polite and transfer it over to feet / miles if you could, please.
So, he summons...
Or if you want to be super helpful to me, yards, because I could equate that to a football field's worth of distance. That's really easy for me to visualize.
So, Mayuri's new Bankai is a giant... pregnant baby.
With,
yeah.
Lamps hanging out of the back of its head.
Yeah, something written on the belly, the pregnant belly, which apparently has had a C-section already performed on it.
It may be actually resting on its umbilical cord. I'm not certain. It seems to be resting on some kind of disgusting mountain of something.
Yeah. So... everyone's like, what the fuck is that? Mayuri says, it's an altered Bankai. Matai Fukuin Shotai is a variant of Konjiki Ashisogi Jizo. I created by modifying Konjiki Ashisogi Jizo. Stop making me say that. Its ability is giving birth to a new... Fuck you, I'm not saying that again. Information I gather during combat. Do you not comprehend it? Well, you didn't give me a chance to comprehend it. You just said it.
Yo, have you seen Aliens?
You will understand once you see it.
It's a more disturbing version of that scene!
So, the new Bankai promptly gives birth to another new Bankai, which is horrifying giant baby with nerves on the surface of its body so that it's in perpetual pain and crying with its horrifying gumless mouth. And...
so he just had a baby rip out of another baby. And yeah. This baby's covered in nerves, like all of its nerves on the outside, so it's screaming in pain every second it's alive.
And so Mary is like, so coming into contact with the ground or even the air sends excruciating pain across his body. But let's set that aside for now. What's important is the body surface's nerves are divided into 70,000 layers. In other words, you can fire your nerves at him, but he will simply peel back one layer on the surface, and that will be the end of it. And so, sure enough, Bernita has tried to launch its nerves at Ashisogi Jizo to take it over. But the skin peels away, and it keeps on advancing, and stuffs all the arms in its mouth, and starts to eat them.
I'd be so pissed if I was his bonk. I was like, why did you make me like this? Why? Ichigo became friends with his sword. You just make me into cruel experiments. I'm an actual soul, you dick.
The whole thing where it was like Tsuraki fights against the soul of his sword so he can't unlock his full potential. What do you think Mayuri's doing?
I've made it my subservient bitch just like my daughter. I'm a really fucked up human being soul thing.
So yeah, the So the Bankai eats the arms, and then we cut over to Nemu, who's just kind of like looking on. And that's the end of the chapter.
The insightful end.
Yeah.
Of this episode, like introspective, like dot dot dot. I wonder what she's thinking. She's like, I'm glad he didn't make me eat the arms or something. Like,
thank God he didn't do that to me.
Thank God
my life already sucks enough.
Thank God I didn't have to become the giant nerve baby. It's such a weird chapter. Like, I had to make a comment on it after I read it this week, where I was just like, did I just read a fucking nerve baby eating hands, like giant anthropomorphic hands? Such a strange chapter, and it can't be the end. Like, I feel like there's going to be a follow-up to this. Like,
well, yeah, now that you've eaten the arms, it can just infect them from the inside.
Or something like that. Or, oh no, you didn't take out that one pinky, and now it's back, and your Bankai, I don't know, ate too much, and now it's going to explode.
The baby will shit it out, and...
Or it can regenerate faster than the stomach acid can dissolve it. Now there's 700 versions of it, so it can rip, or 70,000 versions, so it can rip through all of your nerves at once, or whatever. Horse. I feel like we're not done yet, also because the end of Jump this week had something that teased that the fight may not be over, but...
Oh, okay.
Mary just is such a ridiculously stupid character. Like, this is
He's a good guy, right?
I don't even care if he is a good guy or a bad guy. This is such a morbid and weird fight that seems so inappropriate in Bleach.
Why the fuck is Mayuri always the one that gets to focus on it? Kubo must just have a thing where he's just like, I feel like doing something really weird, and Mayuri is my best out for that. No other character can do these weird things, so he is the one who gets this fight. Even though he is a terrible fucking character.
And it's weird, because the actions he does are almost, like, always actions that if you viewed it from a neutral perspective, you'd be like, well, that guy's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, he, like, impregnates his daughter to spawn a revived version of himself should things ever get bad, or he summons a giant baby.
Well, he hasn't done that.
Well, he did that in the fight with Apollo. He, like, basically...
No, he...
I forget what the whole... I know he impregnated his daughter with something. Like, he had some spawn with her or something.
He didn't impregnate her with anything. He just infected her with every virus possible, basically. So when Zaylaparo rebirthed himself from her, he was already, like, pre-infected with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's basically made his daughter, like, the epicenter for every plague possible, and then he summons giant nerd babies. Like, there's shit, like, when you look at it on the outside, you're just like... This is an awful person. Like, he's the bad guy in this. But because he's on the, you know, because he's got the fucking white robes for, like, I guess I'll like him? I don't know. But his power is just so weirdly defined. He just seems to have the ability to conjure up anything. Good for him, though. I mean, yeah. You know, somebody's gotta take it to Jiwabak, I guess.
Mayuri will be the hero.
It is something where I'm like, what happens, like, when he goes, like, he's gonna have to get distracted from this, or, like, lose an arm or something, because, well, he's probably gonna lose an arm anyway, it's Bleach, but he needs to get, like, disabled for this fight, because otherwise he's gonna be like, why doesn't he just show up against Yuubok, figure out the root to all those powers, and help him out there? At least in Huecamundo, you could be like, well, he was stuck in Huecamundo when Aizen was off in Solstice, or, you know, in the real Karakura town, but here, you know. Fucking get your shit together, Mayuri. You can probably beat everybody if you put your mind to it.
Too busy experimenting because I'm evil!
Yeah, I've got more genocide to inflict. I want to find another species, take out all of their people, fight against the one remaining member, and then, you know, become a good guy again after that.
Because people forget about that stuff after about 500 chapters or so.
Yes.
Even the writer. It's going to fairy tale.
Yeah, sure. Let's jump into that fairy tale chapter 449, Mavis and Xerath. So if you haven't read Fairy Tale Zero, which is the story of Mavis and her basically founding a fairy tale, from what I understand, I assume this chapter makes a lot more sense, because reading it as I do, I have no fucking clue what's going on in this chapter. I know we're in a flashback about when Mavis met Xerath, and they meet. And she's immediately drawn to him, and she teaches him, or he teaches her a lot about magic. And they also explain how he has that curse that immediately kills everyone around him, but she doesn't die, and we find out later it's because she also probably has it, but you're also like, how did you not know that immediately when you didn't just die next to him? And stuff I'm sure probably makes sense if you read that a side story, but I don't really get it.
Well, she thinks that the side effect of the curse was the fact that she sacrificed her ability to age. And so she's like, okay, well, you know, that means they'll never, you know, grow mature or anything like that. And that is a, you know, a big loss. You know, I'm always going to be stuck at this one age and stuff. So my mind can mature, but I'll always physically be this age. She doesn't put two and two together that that means she's never going to die, however. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, makes sense when you consider that, well, if your body doesn't age and break down, then as long as, you know, you don't get fucking crushed by a rock or something like that, of course you're not going to die.
And there's also a bit about, like, a dark guild and, you know, the learning the dark magic of that. Again, I imagine this is something that maybe the side story addressed in some manner, but it doesn't really get followed up on here. We kind of just get a lot of a cut around to a bunch of different characters. Some of the ones like, oh, you know, it's Yuri Dreyer, who's eventually going to be Makarov's father, and Precht Gyebolg, who's going to become Fairy Tail's second master, and then the master of Grimoire Hearts, and then Orin Shirkin, you know, the tree dude, who wore a lot of Hawaiian shirts back then. Didn't have as much of a tree face, so he's a lot less easy to identify. I guess Precht is basically Hades. That's who he is. I think that's the name of him when he was in Grimoire Hearts. There's just a whole lot of stuff about Mavis and so on and so forth. Mavis isn't really a very interesting character, so it's kind of hard to be too invested in a story about her backstory. The best you can get from it is that, essentially, we come to find out she is not exactly, but she seems to also have the same thing Xerath has. So that's a terrifying notion for her, because she has family. You know, Xerath survives in this world because he stays away from people. He can't go near them or he'll murder them. And that's, you know, that's the life he's fine with. But Mavis has a family. She doesn't want to stay away from them, but she can't be near them now without killing them. She doesn't really know how to handle that. She starts to kind of freak out. Runs away. And Xerath, like, has some ominous quote about, like, she does possess the correct qualities to walk by my side. Yeah. And Mavis is off, running off towards her family. Well, she's running off towards the town. I assume she's going towards Fairy Tail. But the last panel is everyone, I guess, celebrating the fact that Makarov's been born. And that's sort of the end of the chapter.
Which, why would you be celebrating that? Seriously, guys.
Yeah, you're like, oh, he's such a big baby! Oh,
I'll bet he's going to grow big, punch stuff, and then get knocked out. And also break up guilds and then be welcomed back as the leader a few times.
He's like, I know one day you're going to be the 4th, 6th, and 8th guild master. Yes, you will. Pokes him on the nose. And the 10th, too! Like, oh, you son of a bitch! Strangles him there.
I don't know. I feel like this chapter actually did accomplish a little bit. I more as the first chapter of the flashback than anything else. Because we're getting an idea now of what law actually entails and what it would mean if that ability were to be actually activated. It would be this, it would, I guess, be basically a weaponized version of Xerath's curse that kills people surrounding him and stuff, like a God-given punishment or something like that. And it also seems to be hinting at why Mavis is naked and stuck inside a crystal. It's presumably a means of protecting people from her curse. And so, but at the same time, she's immortal, so she's not dead and able to pass on. She's actually technically alive, but only in spirit form because her physical form is trapped completely.
Yeah, I grasp that. Again, it's just the fact that I don't find Mavis to be a very interesting character. So, it's somewhat interesting to see the twist in that, how it relates to Xerath as well, but I mean, overall, I kind of just look at it and I'm like, okay, I get it. I just don't really care about Mavis, so.
Well, let's put it this way. Would you prefer if, instead of her backstory being in that side series, we instead dedicated 12 chapters of Fairy Tail to this flashback and then gotten this?
I would have preferred that if we cut out what I hear is a lot of underage Yuri bullshit. Yeah, I mean, remove that, maybe it might be more interesting.
Well, then it would probably be about 6 chapters.
That's probably a plus.
I think that it's just not hero style to dedicate a lot of time to stuff like this. So I understand why things have been put the way that they have been. Mm. But yeah, I think I'm going to wait, I guess, to fully make my judgment on this until we've gotten more.
So. That's fair enough.
So, let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. So, last time, Soma managed to defeat Kuga on day 4 of the festival, and this time we pick up from that point with chapter 131, Waiting for That Certain Someone, which features the 5, I guess, most important female characters in Soma in Chinese dresses, and being various degrees of flustered because...
Well, that's... I need to ask a question, Nick. Is Erina supposed to be, like, I'm in this position because I'm not comfortable in this provocative of an outfit, or is she like that because she's like, I don't like being surrounded by you weird people, get away from me, please? Well, because I don't know enough about her to say if the former is true, but I know enough about her to be like, yeah, she could definitely be like, get away from me! Go away! Stop being near me, you stupid, annoying cousin!
Well, it's kind of difficult to say, because she hasn't been in real life, I guess you could say, a fan service character, because, you know, there was that scene early on with her, like, bathing and then being interrupted by the gorilla, or however she described her broken fantasy with the improper dish. But she has, her character has not been put in, you know, sexual positions other than that. You know, she hasn't been forced to dress up slutty or had her skirt flipped up or stuff like that. Primarily because that's just not how Shokugeki no Soma does his fan service.
Yeah,
they have their clothes explode off. So it's hard to say.
I just like to think she's just like, I hate all of you people, get away from me. Although I don't know who the middle chick is.
That is Hisako. She just got her hair up.
Oh, the secretary?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, now I gotcha.
So yeah, you've got, you know, Megumi there, and then Ikumi and stuff, and then now it's just like, yeah, I've got a fan!
Fans, yo! Also, I guess by that she'd be the tallest member of their group?
I think it's just the way that they're, like, positioned and stuff. It's fucking hard to tell. I don't think that they have released, like, official height measurements and stuff.
Do you think we could rock Chinese dresses like that, Nick?
No.
Alright. Do you think we should try? No. All right.
So, chapter begins.
I think we should find people who could.
Soma and company celebrating him having gotten first place in their section of the field. And Kuga's really pissed off, actually. And he realizes, oh, this is what you were planning after. This is what you were after from the start, is it? And, you know, he's like, oh, you had your sights set on day 4 from the get-go, observing what the crowds did and wanted, just waiting for the huge wave of new customers a Saturday would bring. Then, if any of you had even one thing, just one that you... Oh, fuck. Or rather, you remember Soma's... his promise to Soma, which was, if any of you had one thing you could beat me in cooking, I wouldn't mind taking you up on a shokugeki. So, Kuga's like, ah. I guess he actually had a plan all along. And but he also notes, I was so close while looking at the rankings, which we'll get more info on later, as suddenly, Rindo... who is another member of the Council of Ten. We did meet her in that meeting, but she hasn't really shown up since then, so...
I think the last time we actually saw her was when it was revealed that she was the second seed. Mm-hmm.
So she comes running up, and she's like, ah, oh, Kuga, did you lose your little sales battle? And she, like, just comes up to him and puts her arm around his shoulders, like, you're so hopeless, you've lost... You're such a lost cause. Shut up! You didn't even participate in the festival! You just walked around eating! Walking around and eating stuff is participating. And then she says, "Om nom." But she also actually offers a bit more of a serious criticism, which is, if you spent the whole time holed up in your booth, it's no wonder you lost to some underclassman's little food cart. And, Kuga's like, all right, well, I guess you got me. Everything went according to your plan. But Soma says, what are you talking about? The Moon Festival is 5 days long. There's still a day left. And Kuga's like, what are you talking about? And someone says, if I don't beat you in overall profit for the whole thing, I haven't won. This fight isn't over, senpai. It's just getting started.
I love that they have the dramatic, like, shocking, like, challenge, and it's clearly, like, Soma, like, I can't win. And Kuga's like, you're a fucking idiot.
So yeah, they do A5 with basically the same setup, and Rindo again approaches, and she goes over to Soma and observes, you're working really hard, but it looks like you don't have any chance of actually pulling this off. You got pretty close, though. And Soma says, well, see, my original plan was like this. Day one, stay surprisingly close. Day two, come up with some new dish to make it a fight. Day three, somehow find a way to pull even. Day four, somehow find a way to win easily. It's just like relying on, like, I'll figure something out on each day.
I relate a lot to Soma in my strategies in life. Plan for tonight. Find some way to wake up early tomorrow and get a good night's sleep.
This was my plan. Figure shit out as I go along.
Yeah, my plan was to wing it. But you don't understand, it was like a 5-step winging it plan.
Yeah. But Soma says, yes, I was sure I'd find a way to win somewhere along the way. I didn't go into this thinking I'd lose at running a business, but I did. He outsold me. That hurts.
That's a good line. For a guy whose entire thing was about running a family restaurant, it hurts a lot to him to lose a contest about essentially running a business, running a restaurant.
And I do like whenever we get these little moments from Soma where he wins but still loses, or whatever order you want to put that in. Sometimes he wins by, you know, getting by the minimum standards by the school, but he doesn't meet his own standards, so he's not satisfied, and he realizes he hasn't grown as much as he needs to in order to really compete. You know, sometimes he loses a challenge like he did against fucking... I almost said Toshiki, but that's not his name. Glasses guy he worked for.
Oh. I was about to say Satsuma, and I don't even know what that character's from. Is that from Inuyasha? Who the fuck's Satsuma?
That's not his name either. Sesshomaru.
Alright, that's who I must have been thinking. Is this Sesshomaru, Nick?
No. Sesshomaru shows up in Soma.
If I watched Inuyasha, I'd make a topical reference here. I clearly watched enough to half learn one character's name and then stop.
In order to wield the proper cooking knife, I have cut off my arm and replaced it with my mother's.
Mom, not more salt, you bitch! You always oversalted things.
Oh, God. Then we cut over to Main Street, where a whole bunch of people are like, oh man, look at that pretty chocolate decoration on the curry. How is it even possible that they're mass-producing these incredibly delicate, complex designs? And it turns out that it's at Alice and Company's booth.
I'm like, cheating!
Yeah, she basically, I just printed those chocolates on a 3D food printer.
Like, I press a button and they come out. Oh my god, that's amazing.
A 3D printer? I didn't know you could use it to print food. Oh, dark chocolate's a perfect accent of curry, you know? You take some 80% cacao chocolate, you add a dash of curry spice to it, and then print it out in totally cute designs with a 3D printer.
It's like, oh my god, it's like so good in my mouth. Oh. Nom 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 nom.
I don't know why that was so amusing to me. Oh. So, Hayama is just kind of, like, observing stuff while he's just, you know, cooking regular shit with Kurokiba. And he's just like, wow, you had a good plan. We actually did well. Good job, I guess. Well, he doesn't say that, but yeah, he's...
Yeah, he's like, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, Alice managed to pull it out. She grew a little from this. She came up with a plan, and she managed to work together with everybody. Because she found something that complemented the curry. Yeah.
It is... A little bit, like, I think this Food Wars is probably the strongest chapter of Jump this week, but this was still, I think, the weaker part of it, just because this is a storyline that was kind of built up throughout this arc as sort of the B-plot, mm-hmm. and it kind of just gets, like, a one-page payoff, you know, like, almost like, oh yeah, we needed to address this.
You expect this sort of thing for something like Arena, when, in fact, we're getting a little bit of a springboard into something bigger with her, which I'm fine with, because she never fucking gets to do anything.
And I'm fine with a B story in general. It's just this one had so much build-up to it that it almost felt like there should have been a bigger payoff to it than, like, I used a 3D printer. Like, okay, that's, like, interesting. That's cool. I just thought maybe we'd get something more impactful than this, and almost kind of like a cursory mention at the end of a chapter.
Yeah, the final payoff with Soma was several chapters in a row, showing how he managed to pull everything off and managed to pull ahead of Kuga. This was resolved in 2.5 pages.
Yeah.
I get your point. We cut over to Irina's restaurant, and Hisako's reporting everything. He's like, yeah, we're doing fine. By the way, are you still leaving a single table open again today? And she's like, yep. She says, just in case, and then has a flashback to her childhood and her fawning over Soma's dad, who she doesn't know is Soma's dad. I think that she's still...
God, this is clearly something I still haven't realized in the story yet.
It's really only something that's been hinted towards, honestly. Oh, okay. There's been no, like, oh, you know, when I was a kid, he did this for me. It's just like, no, she, like, knew him when she was a kid, and he left a deep impact on her, and it's only been alluded to. We know specifically that that's what happened, but we
don't
know.
Do we know what he did that left a big impact on her?
Okay. No, absolutely nothing.
I was going to be like, it wasn't like something that he's like, you look like you want a slick of ice cream, don't you, little girl? And she's like, I'm going to become a master chef!
Honestly, if it were just that, I'd be like, oh, that's so cute. Like, Soma's dad serving ice cream.
I don't know if that's the crux of an entire character's life, but okay, I'll take it. Food wars. Yeah. Like, I just shot that. Food wars!
He did one of Soma's weird... He did one of the Yukihiro weird cooking experiments where he, like, put fucking wasabi in the middle of the ice cream scoop or some shit.
He's like, there was an Iron Chef contest I was in earlier today. The ingredient was salmon, and I was really dedicated to ice cream, so you can have what...
I was really dedicated to ice cream this week.
There was a lot left over, surprisingly.
I'm in my ice cream phase as a chef.
Everything ice cream. You have to understand how hard this is for me.
Rice ice cream. Rice cream!
It's such a catchy name. Why isn't it taken on yet? My cereal ice cream flavors are still sitting on the shelf, too.
So, Hisako suddenly realizes that someone is at the door, and she's like, oh, but all of today's guests should be here. Let me go see who that is. And Arian's like, oh, could it be? You know, thinking it might be Soma's dad. But then we cut back to Kuga.
I'm here with my chicken cordon bleu ice cream for you to try, just like you promised when you were a child.
And Erin is like, ah!
She's so happy.
And she lived happily ever after.
Credits.
Like, just the whole series. It's like, wait a minute, what about Soma?
No, Shokugeki no Soma, : Erin is searched to find Soma's father.
And his ice cream.
Yeah, and his sweet ice cream weird flavors.
Ice cream, no Irina. was it Rindo? That wasn't her name. It's close to that, though. It is Rindo. Rindo strikes me as a guy's name. That's why I was confused. Anyway, Rindo is like, oh, you know, back during this year's meet and greet, I had a seriously hard time trying to not bust out laughing. Who would have thought somebody would pull the exact same stunt you did? And Kuga's like, shut up. I don't want to talk about that. And cuts back, flashback to the last year's meet and greet, where Kuga did the exact same thing that Soma did, where he tried to skip the formalities and challenge one of the senpai to a shokugeki instead. Except this time, someone actually did answer his challenge, and it was fucking Tsukasa, the current number one seat, who fucking destroyed Kuga. I mean, it's like a judge is like 5-0, but it seems like it was somehow worse than that by the way that they're posed, because, you know, Tsukasa is standing tall and Kuga is on his hands and knees like he's just been shot or something.
And you just
like
hear
that.
A sound effect of presumably the audience being like, ooh.
It seems like a lot of people might have been at that, because they've got like the whole like giant scoreboard above them too.
So. Yeah, this wasn't like a private one in the you know, a kitchen somewhere.
Oh, we don't really see an audience, but yeah. It's very quickly, shortly dealt with. The point is that after losing that shokugeki, Kuga then approached Tsukasa and said, hey, by the way, during last year's Moon Festival, I heard you took first place in sales at Center Campus all 5 days. So promise me something. If I manage to do the same thing during the festival next month, you'll let me have another shokugeki with you. And, of course, Soma managed to beat him just one day, but that one day means that he's not going to get to face Tsukasa, and in fact, he's probably not ready to face Tsukasa, because he couldn't do the same thing he did. So, I mean, I think that's a very effective use of a flashback. It only took about two pages, but it's like, hey, by the way, Kuga wasn't just being an arrogant dick. He had his own goals in mind, like everyone else in this series does. So, yeah.
It's a cool little flashback, too, in that it really does show that Kuga himself is almost, or I guess rather it'd be that Soma is a younger version of Kuga, just Kuga's a bigger asshole.
Well, and Kuga also knows how to effectively work with a lot of people as well, whereas Soma, you know, just kind of like gathers together his ragtag group of friends as opposed to making a whole bunch of people shave their heads and cook exactly the same way he does.
But just the notion that both of them had sort of the same sort of attitude when there was the big meeting between them. It's cool seeing that relation between their characters.
I do like seeing that there is somebody akin to Soma occasionally, in at least one respect.
And even that after this, I can't actually tell if it's... It looks like it's Kuga saying it, though, but he, you know, someone's knowing, like, yeah, and he's probably just going to keep getting better from here, you know, in reference to Soma.
Yeah, so afterward, you know, we see that basically Soma is losing the fifth day. And Rindo's like, Rindo observes, looks like this is one fight where neither side wins, and you both look frustrated as heck about it, too. And Kuga's like, shut up. But he also predicts that Soma's probably going to keep getting better from here. And then Rindo's like, you know, I think I like this Soma Yukihira kid. And then she immediately goes over to his cart again. And she's like, hey, I've got some tables for us to eat at. And she's like, what are you talking about? I want you to come with me to Tsukasa's booth. You're curious about what kind of food the current first seat makes, right? Come on. I'll take you out to the slopes. And so Judai will get to face the Kaiser of Vilicate. Sorry. I draw GX comparisons here. Yeah.
Was it? Is that?
Yu-Gi-Oh! GX was set at a dueling academy, you know, high school for duelists. And the top student of the school was nicknamed the Kaiser. And so he was like, oh, he's the top student here. And so, you know, Judai basically faced him and got his ass kicked the first time to establish just how far he had to grow as a duelist. And Judai never fucking lost in that series. He lost like 5 times in like 200 episodes. So.
I was gonna say, like, just let me guess. He comes back at the end and beats him. They have one of the climactic final battles that ends in like a vague kind of tie.
Honestly, Judai is fucking ridiculous. So he manages to force a situation at the end of the first fucking season where he will either win or tie the Kaiser. Like, it's fucking stupid how
it's kind of a bummer.
Judai is probably the single most broken Yu-Gi-Oh! Protagonist there has been, because he actually has the superpower to just create cards. He literally has the power to create cards.
What? That seems like that shouldn't be allowed. Like, in the middle of a duel, he's just like, you got a lot of spell cards. Let me just... No more spell cards!
No. Well, yeah, I mean, he never gets that ridiculous, because usually he's too busy being like, and now time for another super broken Neos! But, yeah. Anyway, that's also, you know... rankings for students and stuff... Honestly, is a very old cliche, but that's just the first one that I encountered when I was reading manga and watching anime and stuff. So that's just what made me think of. Anyway, that's actually not the end of the chapter, although it would be a very good ending, as instead we get to see who was the mystery person who is coming into Arina's restaurant as Hisako approaches them. He's like, oh, do you have a reservation? Because it's reservation only. And then when she sees who it is, she immediately stops and stares at him in horror. And Arina comes around the corner and is like, who is it? I mean, if they don't have a reservation. But she also stops and stares in horror. She realizes that the person is her father.
Also be like a hitman or a murderer.
Or a vampire. Like, this is a really creepy looking dude, I think.
I really want to... I hope this dude's a chef, and I want his, like, chef style is he's like... I murder my food. So it's as fresh as possible. It's still screaming by the time it comes on your plate. You're like, oh, you're disturbing, but your food's really good.
I mean, I look at this guy and I think, final antagonist. That's what this guy has written all the fuck over him. That kind of design about him.
He has a very strong design to him. those gloves, the only two people who wear those gloves... No, the only person who wears those gloves are murderers. No one else wears those kinds of gloves.
You know, he's got those dead eyes and the, you know, narrow face and the white streak in the hair and stuff.
Shows like perfectly, perfectly styled hair.
Yeah. This guy, I mean, looks like a fucking creepy badass. So... And also, Erina is, like, really terrified to see him, which, you know, is like, oh, what kind of... Does Erina have some sort of really messed up relationship with her father? You know?
It is interesting. Yeah, she does kind of freak out a little bit as to who he is, so I guess it is kind of interesting to see what we're going to find out from all that. He reminds me also a little bit, and I'm trying to remember his name. It's the villain of JoJo Part 4. I cannot remember this dude's name. Kira, that's his name. Because he's one of those other characters. Yeah, he's one of those Japanese villains who's named Kira, just because it sounds like killer when you pronounce
Kira.
It. Yeah. But that was also a guy who just wore, like, gloves. Or I don't know if he wore gloves, but he had, like, the tie and the suit and, like, the perfectly coiffed hair. It's like, you're just making a bad guy. But no,
you can't dress like that and not realize you're evil, right?
Yeah, you can't, like, walk around in a trench coat and a tie and fucking gloves, leather short gloves, and then be like, no, I just baked dog's birthday cakes. Like, no, you've got to have some illegal dog fighting ring.
I make dog's birthday cakes made with real dogs.
Yeah, I mean, no, what I'm saying is I make birthday cakes out of dogs and give the cake to the dog's owner. Before they realize it's... I'm a bad person, is what I'm saying. But the cakes are delicious. I'm a baker at heart.
So long as you like dog.
Yes, as long as you like the taste of dog, which you don't realize is dog at the time, so you actually might not mind it.
Anyway. Evil.
Yeah, but no, I thought it was a really good chapter from Shokugeki no Soma Food Wars this week.
Honestly, it's like the only one that feels like a complete chapter.
I think One Piece is a bit like that as well, but this was definitely one where I was like, I feel like we actually were progressing somewhere. And I think it might also just be because the end of the chapter is like a preview of things to come as opposed to, and things will continue!
Like, well, yeah, okay. I mean, this actually like wraps up one major plot thread, and a very minor one, although not really in a satisfactory manner, but then also establishes two more afterward. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, yeah, no, very cool.
Alright, should we move on to My Hero Academia?
Yeah, let's do it.
Alright. Number 55, conclusion? Because there's a question mark at the end. So, we get a little bit of a glimpse of the fight going on with Gran Torino and Endeavor against the monsters and stuff. And, they're kind of surprised by how ineffective Endeavor's blast of fire was against it. So he's like, oh, this thing has to have some sort of absorption and release ability, as it then lets out a burst of flame. But he's like, but he has also suffered some damage, so quirk is a joke. But Gran Torino realizes, no, wait, he's actually got multiple quirks! As instead, he bursts into muscle and starts to charge towards Endeavor. And then also sticks his tongue out, which goes into a web of, like, limbs and stuff or something. It's very weird.
So, with your tongue, dude.
Yeah. So Gran Torino just kind of slams it into the ground, and we get a explanation of what his quirk actually is. Jet. There are jet propulsion ports on the backs of his legs that pump out air, but the air that comes out is the same air he breathes in, so using it too much puts stress on his old body. So, okay.
Yeah, I can dig it.
Endeavor's kind of distracted because he's wondering where the fuck his son went, and he flashes back to when Todoroki actually ran off after he got the message from Deku. And Todoroki actually told them, however, where the location was that he was at, and he's like, I think my friend's in trouble, and so on and so forth. So now that it seems as though the problem's been dealt with here, Endeavor says, all right, leave this guy to my sidekicks. You, old man, I need you to make for a certain address. As for reinforcements for the others, Endeavor alone is more than enough. That's a badass line.
Yeah, good for him.
So anyway, last chapter, Deku and Ida kicked and punched Stain at the same time. And Deku reacts from the shock that went through his arm by saying, "Oh god, my arm!" Stain slashes out with his sword to try and attack Ida. And I'm not sure what happens here.
This was, unfortunately, probably the weakest chapter of My Hero Academia I can remember, if only because the art in this chapter was really hard to read. The action throughout this chapter is just kind of confusing and weird. Like, it was tough to read what Gran Torino did the first time when he blocked the monster from attacking Endeavor. It's hard to understand exactly what's happening. What I gather is that Stain goes to attack, Todoroki hits him with fire, and I guess that distracts him, so at the same time Ida can kick him. It's, again, not really clear. And then there's a scene at the end of the chapter, too, where I just had to kind of reread it twice before I actually understood what was happening this week. It's not that the art was bad, it's just I think this chapter maybe got away from him a little bit in terms of actually portraying what he was doing in a stylistic way without letting the style overtake what he's actually trying to show.
So, miraculously, the kids have actually managed to defeat Stain, and at least knock him out. So Ida's leg jets are basically completely shot now. Deku is of course, kind of out of it. And Stain is knocked out. And they're all still in midair from when they punched and kicked him. So Todoroki summons this ice slide for them to safely slide down. And everyone sees, Stain's just kind of slumped over unconscious. Awesome!
Good job, team.
Let's tie him up!
Thank God there's rope here, which I actually say basically in character.
Of course we'd find rope in a trash-filled alleyway.
I guess I like that they bothered to stop and be like, "Where'd you get the rope?" Like, the abandoned alleyway. There's always rope in those sorts of things. It's like, I don't think that's a thing, but all right.
Not good rope.
Yeah. Where'd you find enough rope to tie him up like a fucking, Darren Dastardly villain to like a 1950s damsel to a train track? Like, it's not like we just bound his hands up once. It's like, no, we found enough rope to fucking tie a ship up.
So Todoroki says,
"Thank God this battle happened outside the rope store."
So Todoroki says, even in a 3-on-1, we only barely won because he screwed up. So, yeah, he's like, "We got lucky. We got really lucky." At that moment, Gran Torino shows up and scolds Deku by kicking him in the face. He's like, "How dare you get in here, you disobey me, and I told you to stay in your seat." Kick. Yeah. Then several more heroes show up. Because Endeavor told them to, basically. And they are like, "Oh my god, it's Stain the Hero Killer!" Things kind of wind down for a bit, and Ida apologized to both Todoroki and Deku because he's basically the reason why they got injured. And he says, "I was blind, I lost sight of everything." But Deku also apologized because he's like, "I'm supposed to be your friend, and I couldn't tell that you were so upset about what was going on. I should have, paid closer attention and stuff." And Todoroki is encouraging to Ida, and he's like, "Come on, you're class president, aren't you? Pull it together." So, a little bit of, let's get back to normal. So. Mm-hmm. But at that moment, another creature comes flying in, which only Gran Torino manages to notice in time before it snatches Deku up off the ground. And, so here's the other confusing part, I assume.
Yes.
So, Gran Torino is like, if he gets too high, I won't be able to catch him. And they're like, "Oh no, what's going on?" And Stain acts, pulls a hidden blade, a switchblade, out from one of his sort of wrist covers. He slips it out, presumably cuts the ropes. He lunges forward and licks blood off of
someone.
The blood is not his, by the way, or hers, rather, that he licks it off of. The blood somehow flies into her face.
Now, they do show in an earlier panel that the bird monster is missing an eye. Presumably it lost an eye in the fight, and maybe that's what's bleeding, and blood from that. Because there's also a panel establishing, plip, plip, blood got on her face. But it's really tough to tell that that's what happens because the panel after that is, supposed to show the birds really falling, but it's from like a half it's clear perspective.
That it's clear that the power has affected the bird creature because
it wasn't clear to me the first time. When I read it the first time, I thought he cut her, licked her to paralyze her so he could escape, but he did it to the bird so he could kill the bird to save Todoroki. Or not Todoroki, Deku. Deku.
So then Stain launches into a speech after basically the bird monster now paralyzed starts to fall to the earth and Deku separately. And so Stain says, both this sham-filled society and the criminals who wield their power in the name of petty mischief are targets of my purge, all for the sake of a better society. And he actually catches Deku so that he lands on the ground safely. So yeah, this was kind of weird.
I think this actually would have been a fine chapter had it ended with Ida having a moment with his, you know, Deku and you know, Todoroki recognizing the situation. The end with having Stain get free and save Deku feels unnecessary, if only because I don't really see where you go from this that doesn't feel like this is another kind of anti-climax. Because you can't have Stain fight somebody. It's not going to be intimidating. He's lost. You know, you built this guy up, he lost to those three characters. It's, you know, just the principle of this character doesn't seem like as much of a threat, especially if he's going to fight everybody in a worse scenario than he was in before after he's already lost. You know, this was a situation where he probably should have escaped if you wanted to have him do something else rather than get beat. But because he's already been beat, I'm not very intimidated by this guy. So if that's what they're going for, I'm kind of like just tuning out a little bit. But if it's just a case of him being like, no, I'm going to go into his, you know, into my speech a little bit, I understand it for kind of like an intrigue point. But again, this is a character who is fucked up and weird and wrong. So someone's just going to beat him up anyway. Like, I just don't see much of a point in freeing him. Because I feel like you've kind of handled this character.
I think the point is to continue to establish him as being more morally ambiguous than was initially led on.
I feel like we got that, though, when he specifically said, I'm not going to kill you, Deku. Like, I can gather that. And, like, if the end of the next, or the start of the next chapter is him being like, all right, arrest me because you did beat me and, you know, I'll go along my way. Like, I can be like, okay, he's the honorable sort of villain. But if it's him be like, oh, now I'm going to kill you, Gran Torino. And it's like, well, you lost to the three characters who are already here. And now there's like four other characters. Like, let's not try to beat around the bush here, dude. You're kind of fucked.
Well, maybe it might also be possible that because of his actions here, maybe, well, that doesn't make sense either.
And I mean, there's still technically the hand guy around somewhere, so maybe he gets involved.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe this would be a setup for Deku getting captured, but if that were going to be the case, then the bird creature would have just carried him off.
Yeah. It just depends on what they're doing with Stain.
I think that I'm going to have to, you know, another case, like, wait till next week to see how I feel about this one.
Yeah, and that could ultimately change. I'm going off of what my perception of how things are going to be, but obviously the execution of it could, you know, make me feel a different way. It was just a situation like this. I think I would have rathered a chapter end with a more conclusive note of sorry about how the way things went, guys, as opposed to being like, oh, and now Stain's back up. You know, that would have been, you know, the former would have been like a conclusion, whereas this one feels more like a continuation, which is less intriguing to me after what felt like a pretty satisfactory climax last week.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move on to chapter 797, Rebecca. Last time, everyone was running around, most of the Straw Hats going towards their escape ship, and Luffy heading off on his own because he's got business of his own to take care of. And really, we just kind of just mostly get a continuation of that for the first couple of pages. We see some of the people, you know, from the Colosseum, you know, still continuing to keep the streets clear so that Bartolomeo can lead the Straw Hats on their proper routes. There is a bit...
Holy shit, Nick, I'm so impressed with myself. You know that Navy commander they're talking to all this week?
Yeah.
I know his name.
Okay, go ahead.
Vice Admiral Bastille.
Yeah.
I had to stop for a moment. I was like, do I actually know this guy's name? Holy shit, I do!
So Bastille gets in contact with some of his group, and they're like, well, get in contact with the Eastern Port! And one of the pirates grabs the Denden Mushi, and he's like, this is the naval lookout team in the Eastern Port, over. Everything is under control, sir!
It's Jet and, No, Jet and... I forget the other guy's name. Well, I'll call him Jet and Butcher, but that's not it.
He actually does quote... almost quote Han Solo from Star Wars, like, "We're all fine here now, thank you." He's like, "Who is this? State your name and naval code." "What?"
"Shit!
Oh, they're taking over the Eastern port!"
"Seven, burp!"
A big wrong appears. We get just kind of like a storm of cameos. Like, I think that in this whole basically unfolding scene over the last two chapters, we can see basically everyone who did something important on the good side basically get to show up again very briefly. And
you know
finally,
what didn't show up at all, though?
Who?
The cactus Mexican guy. The guy that got his sombrero. Like, it was kind of shaped like a cactus. He was
he didn't fight in the...
That's what I mean.
Battle.
Like, almost everyone else from the Coliseum had some kind of, like, eventual show-up. That dude didn't. I get the feeling he's actually, like, a secret Chikabu guy or something like that.
No.
he's like, secretly Big Mom.
So, Luffy manages to arrive outside of the palace, and he yells up to Rebecca. And Rebecca sticks her head out the window. She's like, "Oh, Lucy, I'm here!" And, you know, of course, everyone's like, "Oh, capture Straw Hat!" And, you know, Luffy looks up. He's like, "Oh, hi, Rebecca!" And there's just this storm of Marines charging up the hill after him. Oh, God. Establishment of something we already know. That was... Why do we even bother with that, like, lower third of the page? Where Kairos is just like, "Call Viola and Rebecca down here. We must announce to recognize his return to the throne." It's like, yeah. Okay, we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's just, to further establish it this week, since that's what this week's all about.
Right. So, Luffy jumps all the way up to the window, kind of grabs onto the bars there. And we get a bunch of different reactions really quickly. They're like, "Oh my god, it's a pirate! Yeah, but he's the savior of our country. But he's a pirate! Who knows what he'll do?" Good point. Luffy does kind of do some bad shit sometimes. Like that time they robbed Skypiea, who was going to reward them with like 10 times more gold.
They do love that. They were like, "We were going to give them a lot more gold."
So Rebecca is just like, "Oh, I never got to say thank you." And Luffy's like, "That's not why I'm here! Shut up!"
He was almost Mr. T for a moment there. He's like, "I know you big boy, when I look quiet."
So he says, "Oh, are you okay with this? You know, are you okay with the soldier never getting to see you again?" And Rebecca says, "Yeah, I got a letter from the soldier saying he's trying his hardest to keep me away from him. He wants me to be a stranger to him. Why is he doing this? Is it because I said horrible things to him? Does he not want to live with me?" She starts tearing up and stuff. And Luffy says, "How should I know? You figure it out. I have to go now."
"Bitch, let's go. I'm tired of this.
You're going to be a Straw Hat."
I got really... I got terrified when he said that, "Are you coming with me?" And she said, "Yes, I'm coming," because I had read, like, the previous page clear enough. And I was like, "Oh my god, don't make her a Straw Hat unless you make the joke that she's twins with Nami."
"That's my condition."
Like, they immediately got on the crew to, like, "Holy shit, you're just me with pink hair. You're just me with orange hair."
And Sanji's like, "Ah!" So Luffy is like, "All right then, go come with me." And Rebecca says, "Yeah, okay." And Viola tries to say, wait, "What are you guys doing?" And Rebecca says, "Viola, I have a request." Dun, 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 dun. We're going to see this thing later. And Luffy kicks the window open with Rebecca hanging onto his shoulders and jumps down and starts to run over the Navy, basically. He can jump far. He's made of rubber.
Yeah, he's a strong dude.
Kairos gets a report that, "Hey, Rebecca has been abducted by a pirate." And he's like, "Which pirate?" "Straw Hat Luffy." "Why? I allowed him to stay in my son-in-law's shack, that asshole."
I love that Gats is like announcing it too. "Can this be Lucy? Lucy, what's bumming off? But I still love you, man."
And they're like, "What are you doing, Gats?"
"Shut the fuck up, dick."
"Oh, but he's so awesome."
"Yeah, I guess he is pretty cool.
Stone Cold's such an awesome dude, I can't help it." So, Luffy, of course, all the Marines are still trying to capture him. Everyone in the town is freaking out, so he uses his fucking hockey to knock out the soldiers and stuff. Keeps on running and running and running and running and running. And they have a little conversation as they're running along. And Livia says, I'll put you on the other side of the hill so I can be a decoy, and then you have to get the rest of it yourself. And, you know, I guess this is basically their, you know, goodbye, sort of. You know, Rebecca just saying, yeah, thanks, Lucy. And that's, I think, the last time we see them together.
Oh, fuck you, Replica Rabbit. Her nose is different. Yes, Rebecca's nose is slightly larger if you look at it in profile. Fuck you. That is, like, their defining characteristic. Like, no, you two are like, she's like, no, if you look at us from the profile, all right, your nose is a little bit bigger. That would be great. That just became her fucking story. Like, I'm not Nami. My nose is a little bigger.
Sanji's like, Rebecca, if you're gonna be a Straw Hat, there's one condition. Chopper! Perform plastic surgery to alter her nose slightly so that she and Nami can be perfect twins except for their hair.
Yeah, he's like, I won't bother.
Big screen fantasy will be complete, but only after the plastic surgery.
Also the fact that neither of them like you.
Shut up, I just need them to be next to each other.
That's enough for me. I'm like, you're so sad. I remember when you used to be a suave motherfucker.
And then you did that whole I can't wait to see Nami grow up thing, and I was like, no, that's enough.
Then the time skip happened, and you almost died from perverted blood loss.
That island fucked you up, man. So we cut over to... I've been saying Kairos instead of Riku. My mistake. Riku is the guy who's been freaking out. Kairos is over in his shack now, and he kind of has like a little conversation to himself / with his dead wife. And he's like, my role has ended, Scarlet. Forgive me for falsifying the nature of our marriage. It is all for Rebecca's sake. She endured 10 years of suffering and insults for being royalty. So this time, I want her royalty to bring her happiness. I kind of get where you're going from. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
There's one panel here I actually like, too. It's the top left one on the page.
He looks happy.
He looks happy, but he also looks really weathered. He really does give the impression of an old man who's been through a lot, where you can just see all these scars on his face and the wrinkles, the lines that just show his age. Like, it's just a nice example of art kind of showing his character's been through a lot, but he's happy.
Well, and also this is the first time in basically, you know, 2 decades where he gets to just kind of wear normal clothing and stuff. And he's not, I mean, he's got his sword with him, but, you know, whatever, and stuff. And, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm done fighting now. So, I'm done. My daughters can be happy now and stuff. But he goes outside planning to actually set off and leave the country, it seems like, because he's got his bag with him and stuff. And, but Rebecca is there, and she says, oh, you shouldn't lie like that, and Kairos says, look, no, it's not a lie, I was a man of no value long before, I lived a life of violence, I ended a person's life with my own hands, and no matter the reason for it, and you know, you've got to understand, but Rebecca just shouts over him, I'm not the daughter of some prince from somewhere, I don't even know who that is, I don't care if you killed hundreds of people, and your hands were black with blood, I only have one father. I am the daughter of Kairos. So don't lie to me. And she's crying and doing the whole One Piece snotty cry thing. And Kairos starts to cry too. And remembers his promise to her when he was the soldier and she was a little girl. Until the day that you are finally happy, I will be at your side. And so Rebecca runs to him and hugs him and says, just be at my side. And Kairos is like, you really want me to be your father? And Rebecca says, yes. So.
It's all tearful.
Yeah.
He's even crying. That's not going down. That it is a touching scene. Like, again,
For all the people who are criticizing Rebecca, it's like, oh, you shouldn't get to do this and that. It's like, keep in mind, this is what she specifically wanted.
Yeah, this is her character. This is what we've known about her from basically the beginning. And I think this is actually a really good scene. The only thing, though, that just keeps it from being, like, a great scene to me is, you know, one, her art style is not particularly distinct, so it's hard not to see her dig Nami and just kind of get a little turned off by that.
But then Nami's cousin's happy.
Yeah. Pink-haired Nami's super happy at that. No, it's great. I just wish real Nami had a father. But the other thing is that this lacks the particular style and flair that have made other moments similar to this more memorable in the series. It doesn't have, like, the X over the arm like they had with Vivi, or, you know, lacks that, like, dramatic build-up, like, seeing Luffy's shadow cast over the ocean, like the stories of all the giants they saw before the Skypiea arc. Like, it didn't have that long build-up payoff necessarily that this one did. It kind of has it a little bit with, you know, stay by my side, soldier, you know, that kind of callback. But it just doesn't have that one, like, piece that Oda generally tries to put into these stories that makes it so much more powerful and gives it, you know, that perfect closure from a long, overarching sort of situation. I think if it had had that, I think it probably would have been, like, a holy shit complete chapter. But as it is, I'm like, it's a good chapter. This is probably the second best one in Jump this week. But...
Well, and keep in mind, Rebecca and Vivi are two very different situations. Vivi actually was traveling with the Straw Hats for a while. And so there were some smaller arcs where she was actually, you know, there, and we got to know her a bit more and stuff. Rebecca, we've only known since they got to Dressrosa.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily comparing it directly, like, you know, point to point with Vivi, but just that moment of here's kind of a little bit of a closure to this arc, not arc specific, since obviously Vivi was with the crew a little bit longer, but I guess in the terms of this, maybe closer to what I was saying with Jaya, where you're like, this is that character, or this is that moment that sort of has an emotional tie-in to what the side story to all this has been. Sort of like how, you know, ringing the bell was in Skypiea, and then it had that big moment of Luffy's shadow cast over the ocean, where you're like, ah, this is tied up not only, you know, the battle with Ineru, but also the story with the Skypeans, and also the group of, you know, Roland's descendants down below, like, it, you know, tied it all together very thematically and in this big, grandiose way. And necessarily this isn't the end of this arc either. You know, we could still get that moment. It's just this one little story I was kind of hoping we'd have that extra something that was going to, you know, sort of wrap it all together. It just didn't seem to be that element in existence.
I think part of it is the fact that whereas those stories were all about, you know, that element of them, you know, Baroque Works was basically all about the corruption of the kingdom and stuff. And Skypiea was all about stuff with the giant and all that stuff. This was one element of this, because the main plot of... It was the main thread going on, you know, with, you know, how Doflamingo had ruined the kingdom, and the relationship between Kairos and Rebecca was the main example of that we got to see. However, this is also, you know, the Straw Hat's first actual encounter... with, you know, it was the climax with Doflamingo that had a lot going on before this arc. It was, there's the stuff that happened with the flame fruit, the reunion of Sabo and Luffy, or the introduction to Fujitora. There was a lot more going on, so this doesn't get as much focus, and so I think that's probably what really takes away from it, is the fact that it is one of several things rather than the really big thing.
And also, I guess maybe what I'm thinking, too, is maybe I'm putting it in a slightly off perspective, and that I'm looking at this almost as though, like, oh, you know, it may have been their better versions of a story done from, like, the angle of Rebecca, whereas if I actually think of it another way, is this is almost more of Kryos' story as well. Mm-hmm. I think this is actually a much more satisfying kind of character arc that we've gotten in a lot of these similar characters from other past stories in One Piece, you know, like... Wiper from Skypiea, or oh god, what was the guy name in Alabasta? Vivi's boyfriend, the rebel Kai, not Kaya, fuck, what was his name? Anyway, the dude from Skypiea who was in the rebel army. I'm blanking on his name right now. I think it's, I'm almost positive it begins with a K, but those kinds of characters, I think this guy was a bit more memorable. And Kryos leaving a mark on everything. Koza, that's it. That was it. Jana, we actually didn't get to the end of the chapter. I was about to sum it all up.
Like, well, yeah, there's one more page where basic... actually, there's a page and a half more. The last page is just Bartolomeo sees Fujitora approaching the ship, and he's like, oh, crap!
Fuck me!
But before that, we see Viola approaching Riku, and she says, Rebecca's not coming back. And Riku's like, oh, as I thought. But Viola says, this was her decision. And we see that what Rebecca had asked her when right before she left with Luffy was, I'm sorry, will you be the princess for me? And Beale actually says, as a matter of fact, it's the second time in my life I've been asked that preposterous question. Riku just fucking laughs. Goes like, yeah, maybe I'll actually get to do it this time, Dad.
Oh, that would be great. She snapped it back at him. He's like, I can't fight your blood. You're like, I can fight my own man. What was that? Nothing.
I've got super eye powers, old man.
I can see what you're doing at night.
Maybe you won't get taken over and kill your own people before I get to be queen. What?
What was that? Nothing. Just, you know.
It's actually kind of a cool note to leave off on, I think, for her, which is like, oh yeah, she did kind of have to promise that with Scarlet, didn't she? Because Scarlet did the same thing.
And it was kind of a nice little family moment between them too, yeah.
I do come out of this actually really liking Viola, even though she didn't do very much. I like the actual continuing self-sacrifice that she made at different points in this arc. You know, doing it in the past, doing it here, and, you know, hiding her identity against Doflamingo and so on and so forth.
And her lips make her a more iconic character than Rebecca, so...
She even doesn't look just like Robin. She looks different enough from her, because she wears the earrings, and she wears the makeup, and her hair is done different and stuff.
Eyes are a little bit different, yeah. She's a full character.
Oda gave her a different face.
And a cool power. She can make whales out of her tears.
Tear whales!
That's just silly.
Viola for Straw Hat! Alright, let's book it over to Toriko then, why don't we?
Oh, yes. Oh, Nick, can we possibly go on for an hour and a half on Toriko?
I don't think that's possible, Chris. Toriko, chapter 35, sorry. Signs of Life. 2-page spreads. All the two-faced spreads. Big animals. There's lots of big animals.
It's... I'm like, do we give it a full recap, or do we just sum it up as quick as possible? Because it's...
We cut away completely from that whole stuff going on with Komatsu.
Like, Yoda just murdered a dude, and we cut away to be like, and the other animals are moving. I'm like, we had better fucking cut back, and the fucking oil chef is murdered someone else.
Yeah, it's like, you know, animals are on the move. Whether it was because of the war cry given by the new Nightmare Heracles, or maybe it was the dance with the Monkey King, or maybe it was the man's awakening 2 years ago that started it all. Who knows? But everything is connected. It all goes beyond space and time, and right now, the strongest of the Eight Kings in Area 6 is on the move, and it looks like a sperm with wings!
I so want next chapter to just... open up with No-No standing over a corpse with a knife in her hand. And she's like, that's what happens when you challenge me to ice cream, bitch! Rice cream is mine! It's just Aaron as dad dead on the floor with a knife in his face. And then we cut away and never address it.
So yeah, I mean, it's like all the different members of Toriko's group, you know, they went to different areas in the gourmet world, and they're meeting different members of the Eight Kings. Zebra and Brunch meet the Deer King, Sky Deer, which is as big as a mountain and it's got shit growing on its back! And the Live Bear and Sunny see a wall, which is actually a snake. The Snake King! Mother Snake! Shouldn't it be the Snake Queen? Anyway, and then fucking Coco and him, they see the
Poison Avian Chef. King.
They see the Avian King, Emperor Crow, and one of its feathers has fallen down, and it's as big as a skyscraper, and is blacking out the sun. And then Star June and Toriko see the Royal Land Shark Fish King, which looks way smaller. And at first, when I saw this, I was like, there's no way that that's one of the Eight Kings, is it?
It's like such a bummer.
It looks so small by comparison. And Toriko's like, oh, I think we can actually take that thing. Star June's like, actually, I don't think we... I wouldn't mind fighting him, but watch out for that guy behind him. The Wolf King, Battle Wolf. Which, by the way, I actually do think looks really fucking cool.
If you put an eye patch on it, it would be...
It could be zombies.
Yeah. Oh my god, that'd be awesome.
I really do think that that one panel with the Wolf King's face looks awesome.
It
is. The way the scar goes across its face and the way one of its eyes is bigger because it's been cut up and stuff. So presumably it's like blind in that one eye. So I think it looks cool.
Has Terry been getting scars over her face?
I don't recall. And also, Star June refers to Terry as a guy in this chapter. So I'm confused as to what Terry's, fucking gender is now. I'm confused. Because Toriko also says he.
Yeah, he'll come. I guess it's a he now. Alright. Yeah. I should just ask the editor of Toriko. I should just be like, hey, is it a dude or a chick? I assume it's a he, based on the fact they refer to him as a he. Maybe I just was under the wrong impression it was a woman.
Yeah, so Star June says, oh, is that little pup still doing well? And Toriko says, Terry inherited the blood of that king. He'll come here, I know it, to win the strength of the eight kings. And we cut away, briefly, to see that Bambina is fighting with Kiss and Quinn and Terry. I guess as a form of training.
The pets made note that they disappeared after the fight with the Monkey King because they weren't strong enough. So I guess they stayed behind, actually, to fight the Monkey King and get onto the same level as him.
Yeah. And you can see that Bambina is not only kicking their asses, but is having fun and clearly not trying. So.
Also, how the fuck does a bird fight a monkey? Like, I don't. Like, this bird's so useless.
Maybe I'll get it with my claws this time. Oh, he kicked me again. Goddamn.
This bird better fucking, like, just fart poison or something. Because it's like, you're so worthless. You have no hands. All you have is claws.
Also, Zongay is still there, I guess. And he sees this, like, portal into space, which presumably that's where Bambina is fighting with them. They've, like, gone into the other world space kind of place, I think. And so one of his followers is like, what is that? And Zonga says, I don't know, but either way, if we're going to run, now is our best shot! And Bambi just sticks his head out and he's like, no, you don't, baby.
I was so hoping that he was going to be like, what's in there? You start hearing Barry White music coming on and, like, the Monkey King in a robe with a bunch of candles behind him. Like, oh.
And then, again, we cut away to Area 2, an island in the northeast, Neo's hideout, where a weird-looking dude in an astronaut suit is commanding...
It's the spaceman! Wasn't this the dude who's like, I'm the gourmet, like, I'm the space gourmet dude?
The guy who betrayed them, right?
Yeah, he fucking left!
And Komatsu's friend, whose name I've forgotten, is there, and his hair is all white...
Ume? And, was that it?
I don't fucking know.
Is it Ume?
I don't fucking know. Yeah, it's Tepe approaches him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tepe comes up and he's like, shh, it's okay. I'm not under Joey's control. You're Nakaome, the chef, aren't you? I just said your name for the benefit of idiots who are reading this. For some reason.
Chris. Like, it's just his comma, Chris. I'm like, oh.
And Nick.
No.
For some reason, you also haven't been affected by the germ. Now listen well. We're getting out of here. I have an idea of what they're after. But first, I want you to tell me something. In Area 1, what exactly did you see? And, apparently, it's a dude with tumors growing everywhere. Like, giant muscular dude with, like, six arms and a giant throbbing tumor coming out of his back.
It's just a very disturbing dude. Like, something I would have expected out of, like, Halo 5's Flood. What I assume the Flood's reached at this point.
If you shoot it, then it'll burst open and the spawn ones will come out.
Yeah, you can't take it out from close range, it'll damage you.
So that was Toriko. That was not what I was expecting for this week.
What were you expecting, Nick?
I was expecting the...
to cut back to the story you've been following for, like, 5 weeks now, that they were just like, oh, let's stop for a moment. Let's jump over to something else.
Right. Anyway. I guess we will also very briefly talk about a new addition to Shonen Jump, which was Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5. For those not familiar, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is now in its fifth series, and it's called Arc 5, and it's actually about, like, different dimensions and stuff, and parallel realities and that sort of thing. But the gimmick of the series are these things called action duels, where basically, we have mastered solid holograms! Yes. So they're like, so basically they make these giant environments that the duelists actually run around in, and they pick up cards to use in their duels and stuff. That's the gimmick of the series. It allows them to more easily cheat, because if they don't have enough cards in their hand, they run over and they pick up a different
one. What? How do you tie that to the game?
Basically, they have limited effects, so, you know, you can only have one of the... They're called, like, action spells, I think. And you can only have one of them in your hand at a single time. So if you go and grab one, you have to use it before you can get another one.
But these are cards that aren't in the actual game itself, like in real-life right. trading card Yu-Gi-Oh! I can't... Okay.
You can't actually... They don't actually sell these. They did that with 5Ds, too, because there was, you know, the riding duels, and they were like, oh, this can only be used in a riding duel if you've got this many speed counters and stuff. And it's like, well, that's never going
to show. Wait, what? There are cards specific to, like, this only works when you're riding a motorcycle and doing this?
Yeah, because there are different mechanics in those types of duels, basically.
Please tell me that's one that's like your bike just breaks and you're like, just like, oh, I'm going to eat shit!
Well, there are cards... Well, okay. As you progress through the duel, you get these things called speed counters, and a couple of times they actually said that the speed of your D-wheel or your motorcycle is actually correlated to the number of speed counters you have. So there were a few times when someone would lose a bunch of speed counters and then they would slow down suddenly or gain a bunch and then speed up suddenly. That came up occasionally. It wasn't incredibly consistent.
Anyway. And now in this series, like I can run over and I'm like, oh, it's a card that causes an earthquake. And then like I play
Well, that doesn't happen.
My opponent's like, oh, I'm disrupted, and I run up and I slap all the cards out of his hand, and I'm like, you lose!
Actually, one of my favorite moments in the series was, it turns out there's this entire school built around instructing their duelists in martial arts, so that when it comes time for an action duel, anything goes. So if a guy's running around trying to get an action card, they just go up to him and punch him in the gut and kick him in the face and knock him over. Mm. It's awesome. They're all dicks, though. Anyway, this first chapter introduces some of the main characters, like the principal of the Good Guy Duel School, which is in really weird English. It's called Shuzo. It was called the Yusho Duel School in the anime. I have no idea why it's this. And also, they've changed his name, too, I think. Anyway. And so he's like, oh, welcome to our school. And then we introduce the female protagonist, whose name is Yuzu. But then we immediately cut away to some guy who looks a lot like Yuma from Zeal. I have no idea why. Anyway, so he's like kind of crying, and then a cloaked figure appears. And he's like, why are you so sad? I overslept, and I couldn't go to the Leo Corporation Duel Tournament. And I didn't get to see any real monsters. I wanted to see a dragon. I see. They make the monsters physical with solid vision. I can't just little kid cry. This is a job for me! And yeah, it's the guy in a mask who I believe is supposed to be Yuya, the main character. But he's wearing like this faceplate and stuff.
But he summons a...
Oh no, he's not. That's not supposed to be Yuya. That is... the guy we're introduced to at the end
guy he summons like odd eyes phantom dragon. I'm like, right. Oh cool, we're keeping up with the blank the adjective eyes adjective dragon okay. theme.
What happens is the guy in the mask heads off immediately, and then another cloaked figure who is Yuya, he reveals his odd eyes phantom dragon to the kid, and so he gives the little kid a little smile because he wanted to see a dragon inside. He's like, here you go, kid, I heard your conversation.
Wait, there were two figures?
Okay. One of the things about Arc 5 is that there are four parallel dimensions, and some of the characters in the series, primarily the main character, Yuya, and the female lead, Yuzu, have parallel versions of themselves in those different realities. They have incredibly different hair, but their faces and eye shape and stuff are the exact same.
So oh, okay, so it's like the fucking the other world in Fairy Tail.
Right, so this guy in the mask is one of Yuya's doubles, and he's from another dimension. I forget his name, actually. It's Yuto, that's it, I think. They're all Yu something, so forgive me if I don't have
to... Yugi!
I believe it's Yuto. I want to say it's Yuto.
Do any of the series... Like, I know there was, like, a cameo from Yugi in the first episode of GX.
On it, actually, there some of the 5Ds characters show up in Arc 5, because they go to a world that's very similar to the 5Ds world, so, like, different versions of those characters actually show up in it.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, anyway... It sometimes gets confusing, and I imagine it'll actually be more confusing in black and white manga, because you won't be able to just look at their hair colors and be like, oh, that's who that is and stuff. Anyway, so the president of the Leo Corporation, his name is Reiji, he is searching for the person who carries around the Odd Eyes Phantom Dragon and stuff. Someone believed to be the Phantom is traveling north over the rooftops and stuff, and so he's like, all right, capture the Phantom, and he sends people after them and stuff. But instead, they end up cornering Yuto, and they've, like, summoned fucking SWAT helicopters and shit in order to track this guy down. They actually have guns! He's a guy with a card, guys. Chill.
Maybe it's, the duel guns. Like, you get shot, and you're like, now you must duel me!
And one of the things about each of the manga series after the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that they tell versions of the story that are, like, completely different from the anime. So, like, even Yu-Gi-Oh! Had, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! R that told it a completely different story from the original that didn't show up in the anime, or the original manga for that matter. The Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, 5Ds, and Zeo manga all told slightly different versions of the story, and so things were different. And so here's something very different, which is the fact that three of the characters are all just working for Reiji, including one that in the original anime is from the same dimension as Yuto. So why he's not working with him, well, that's different. And also, a guy from another dimension is also working for him and stuff. They're just flying around in helicopters and stuff, and they're trying to capture this guy who they think is Yuya, but is actually Yuto. And so even people who watch this anime are like, what the fuck is going on? Because there are characters in places where they wouldn't be normally, but that's just kind of par for the course when it comes to Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga that follow the anime. Also, apparently, Yuya might be kind of evil in this version, or misunderstood, which was something completely different from the original as well. Anyway.
Now, helicopters. I feel like people have said 5Ds was good.
5Ds was good.
Or Zeo is good. I guess it's still going on. Or not 5Ds. What's Arc 5?
That's what Arc 5 is very good, and it is currently ongoing.
Would you recommend... I'm not going to watch the anime, Nick. I don't have time for this.
I don't know.
Should I keep reading the manga?
I don't know. I haven't read it. Based on this first chapter, I'm kind of intrigued, but I don't know. I mean, if maybe we'll end up reading it some more. I don't know. Anyway, so Yuto gets confronted by Shingo, or Sawatari, who is in one of the helicopters, and he's like, oh, I will face you in a duel. And Yuto is like, unfortunately, I am not the Yuya Sakaki that you seek. And he takes his mask off and reveals, I have different hair! But I'll face you in a duel anyway.
Like, was this supposed to be a twist?
That's the thing, is that we see...
Who are you?
We see little glimpses of Yuya under the hood and stuff. But it's hard. It is genuinely hard to tell he and Yuto apart when their hair is black and white... And also is obscured by the cloaks.
Oh, wow, holy shit. His hair color in the anime is green and red?
Yeah. Yuto's is like dark purple and light blue.
This is silliness, Nick.
Everyone has remarkably two-toned hair in both Zeo and Arc 5.
Scared. This world's scary and confusing to me.
Because he's got green and red hair, that's what's...
Yeah, I'm like, I can't take this world seriously.
It's not the Phantom Dragon he summons. It's that hair.
It's so weird. There shouldn't be two hair colors in one thing. Yugi was the only one who could do that. Just Yugi!
Originally, yeah. But yeah, it was honestly hard to tell what was going on because they were like, who is who and shit? And it was like, I don't fucking know. You won't tell me which one either of them is. The only way I could tell who was the fact that Yuto was wearing his mask. which he then takes off to reveal himself. It's like, well, don't put your fucking hood up again then, because then I won't be able to tell who you are.
There's a character in Arc 5 called Crow Hogan?
Yes.
Oh, does he talk like Hulk Hogan?
No.
Damn! Oh, we were going to have so much material if he did.
That joke did get made all the time as soon as they revealed what his last name was, though.
Everyone made a bunch of jokes about how racist Hulk Hogan was?
No! Oh, okay. Arc 5 happened like 5 years ago.
That's what I was going to say.
We didn't know. Well, I think everyone always suspected.
He did
call Yokozuna, quote, a Jap, so...
I mean, he was always an asshole. Really, was racism too far from the trend of him being like, I made Undertaker! I made everybody!
Did he really claim that?
Oh, God, you need to find a copy of his book. I'm sure they're super cheap right now. Oh, God, yes, and he takes credit for making everybody... Everybody, he's like, I knew it was too soon to drop the belt in Ultimate Warrior, but I said, brother man, I'm gonna make this something out of this guy, and it was up to him to drop the whole ball, because this is at the time where everyone's still shit on Ultimate Warrior. Oh, yeah. It's a classic, you have to read it. He created the NWO, he created Lex Luger, he created, I think he takes credit for Stone Cold.
I created the NWO even before the other two guys came over and established the entire premise for us creating it, brother.
It's so glorious.
Oh, God. What a dick. I fucking love to hate Hulk Hogan. Anyway, that's going to do it for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Edition 2 Weekly Manga Recap this week, I guess, and I think that's going to wrap things up. Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you, everyone. Oh, wow, we did manage to get 2 hours out of this. Yes!
Take that.
Oh, people thank didn't you. Believe you in us. Know, we might not ever talk about you again, but you did job this week.
You did yeoman's work for us.
We record the show live here on twitch.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up, so make sure to follow us on Twitter. He is at RoloT. I'm at YRoller of Time. Thank you, everyone, who joined us. And thank you also to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Chris, do we have any new supporters that we need to give a shout-out to this week?
Yes. Some of these may be doubles, but I believe everyone in here is new. So special thank you to Brandon Beamish, to Jason Dyson, to Oliver Anderson, John Lozano. There's a couple here. Ramon. Which I like to assume is Razor Ramon. I don't think it is, but I want to believe so.
Hey, Chico. let me support your Patreon.
What? He's South African in your version. it's like Mr.
Sorry,
Echo.
Razor Ramon was never one of my favorites, all right? I thought he was...
No, he's white, though, right?
I thought he was amazingly lame, honestly.
from Aaron Jankolo, Miko.
Miko.
It's not Miko. I don't know how the heck to pronounce that last name. Kirojungus. And Tropical Bloods.
Oh, God. Thank you, everyone, for your support on Patreon. You allow us to do some special stuff. For example, the question and answer stuff that we have released and put up for everyone, and also the special bonus episodes available only to champion level patrons. And we've got more stuff on the way.
Oh, awesome. By the way, the champion patron, for those of you who supported us in August, is up. Top 10 manga badasses with Nick and myself, where I run down a list. That's
and
up
I tell
on Patreon.
Him if he is right or wrong.
Yes. And Nick is judgmental of me. You can check that out. It's up there. You can download it. Enjoy. If you have any issues getting it, just let me know. But to give you a heads up, for those of you who maybe aren't a supporter now and maybe are curious what next month's going to be, we are also going to be doing a top 10 next month, but it's going to be a little bit of a difference. It's not going to be as clear-cut of a top 10 as last time. This is going to be a top 10 sports series that need a manga. And I know some of you out there are like, well, I don't care about sports. How could this be interesting to me?
Well, he'll show you.
It's because I'm going to go into... I'm not just saying, oh, these sports deserve a series. I'm going to then pitch Nick on a series for it that I am writing up the description for. Imagine, like, looking on the back of a volume, seeing that description that describes the series. I'm going to be doing that for 10 sports series, and I promise you, there are some fucking ridiculous ones out there, because I have some very obtuse ideas for how certain sports should be executed. I won't spoil anything, but I'm going to tell you, it is going to be... I'm unbelievably excited to do that episode, if only because I really want to hear Nick's reaction to some of these suggestions.
I'm so looking forward to it. I've, in fact, been looking forward to this since before we got the Badasses list put up, but we're going to have to wait in order to give that to you guys. So look forward to that. Also, check out all of our past episodes. You can find them on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. And also, you can subscribe to us on iTunes as well as leave a comment or rating to help us beat the woodworking podcasts in that category.
Mm-hmm. And this is also, I guess, for the people who are still in the chat room and listening, Infamous just posted up a link to the straw poll he does where he wants to see what people want to see as the visual edition for this week. So you can vote on it there.
And special thanks go out to the Infamous Plant for making those special visual editions, as well as to Felix Dark, who recently put up a very long episode because we talked for a very long time about Shaman King.
I was going to say, he did a Shaman King one, and I was like, that Shaman King was like a two-hour-long podcast with, like, Shaman King, oh, and they kind of talk about Fairy Tail at the end. So he essentially did a visual edition of that entire podcast, so
yeah.
Huge kudos to him on that.
Special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our talk artist. You can check out his work. I am losing the ability to speak. We are ending at the proper time here. You can check out Steve Mann's stuff at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, idropboops.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann. He does our tarot cards, and he is awesome. Lastly, you can send your criticism questions for us to answer on a Q&A edition of the show, and also suggestions for us to read in the future on the show in the comments section, or email them to us weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. I can't fucking speak anymore.
Nick,
I can't do the
right.
Sign off. I've got it written in front of me. I'm losing it, Chris.
You're getting old, Nick. We're getting old.
What do these symbols mean? What's this A with the little circle going around it? Is that a dot?
It's like all the people today writing number signs on Twitter saying it's all sorts of stuff. No, in my day, it wasn't a hashtag. It just meant that it was a number.
Back in my day, a hit song didn't have to have a number sign in front of it.
Back in my day, we bought our music on audio cassette and then laid a compact disc and can't flab it. We liked it. We didn't. It was very expensive, but... Actually, today's model's much better. You can steal most of it, but God damn it, I like old things.
I think that's it.
Was that everything?
I got everything out.
Oh, I missed the iTunes. We actually did have some 5 stars.
Well, are you still recording?
Yes, I'm still.
Fine, ruin the perfect ending to the show, Chris.
I'm sure we can recapture that magic. Shoutouts to LionMan9. Since not only did this series introduce people to decent series and provide a unique review of what's happening in those popular series, but the chemistry between the two hosts is perfect. From Shockwave, who says, I don't know why people wouldn't be listening to this. It's hilarious, insightful, allows for great jokes. It'll teach you how to cook, how to make things out of wood, draw, and tell a great story.
Wait.
I think you just assumed we were all the hobby podcasts. And also from Juju... Juju012693 says WR is basically Chris and Nick sharing their thoughts and critiques about manga on a weekly basis, and it's a fun, entertaining podcast. And if you're looking for one, go check it out. So thank you to all you guys for 5-star reviews, our reviews on iTunes. Greatly appreciated.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. And now I think we're actually
now I'm
going
just gonna, yeah. I'm trying to like. I thought, like, oh, it would be hilarious ways if you just hear me, like, roll from my chair into my bed. Like, that sound, and I'm just like, now it's time for Evening Christopher to call it a night. But I was like, oh, it's not going to go as well as, like, you're just going to hear a sound of fucking 180 pounds of shit hitting the ground. I'm like, oh, I missed! Like, flop! And it's just an hour of me trying to get back up to my mic to turn it off. Like, please, someone call the police.
Well, my favorite, you recall, my favorite moment, way back when we did the Dragon Ball Evolution video, my very favorite moment of all of the stuff that came out of that was you falling on the bed, bouncing off, knocking over everything on your way to the floor.
Oh, I fell! I knew it so instantly it went bad.
I fell!
I took the clock out with me. I broke it.
Oh, God. I gotta fucking wait for Paw to get all this shit on YouTube so I can watch that 50 times in a row now tonight. God damn it.
Oh, I fell. There really shouldn't just be like a YouTube poop of that. Like, oh, I fell. Oh, I fell. I assume if anyone hates me, that's just what they watch over and over again on YouTube.
Chris made himself look like an ass and hurt himself all in one glorious 5-second span.
What a big fat asshole.